Everyone please rise. Court is in session.
Hi, it's Judge Jeanine Pirro, and I want to invite you all to check out my brand new podcast, Due Process with Judge Jeanine. I've got the background and experience to bring you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Join me and my co-host, Terry Trespicio, as we cover the hottest legal stories and breaking news. And remember, you do have the right to an attorney, and I'm giving you your due process. So be sure to download Due Process with me, Judge Jeanine Pirro, every Monday at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who's riding high off a Jacob deGrom gem. I am Rob Sisson. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to This Week in RHAP. This is a new show, new format that we're playing around with, a little bit of a Saturday morning slash afternoon catch-all, where we talk about the week that was on RHAP, and best of all, we get to hear from you guys, because we are here live on blab.im, where we can get your feedback instantly via questions from the chat room, and also having you guys hop on with us here live. And here with me is my co-host for this very experimental project. Here is the great Jordan Parhar. Jordan, how are you?
Rob, I'm great. I'm just a little confused, though. I thought that this was tryouts for the Tyson Hour. Mertz and Survivor Oz told me they would be here, and I don't see them anywhere.
Yeah, that's later. That's later today. Anyway, okay. So very excited to get into this. We're recording this here live. It's a little bit after 1 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, and we'll try to do this from time to time on a Saturday. Next Saturday will be a no can do, because I'm actually going to be going up to San Francisco to go and visit Blab headquarters with the great Tyson Apostle next weekend.
Ooh, that'll be fun. You and Tyson going on a little weekend excursion.
Yeah, a little weekend headquarters. Little weekend trip up to San Francisco, and we're actually going to be doing a show there live sometime in Saturday late afternoon, early evening. Coming up next weekend on Saturday the 17th. And I believe if you're in the San Francisco area, I think that they are, that there's a limited number of tickets for people that are coming. There's going to be like a few live Blab shows in a row. We'll post a link to that in the on the show page on robiswebsite.com. Or if somebody from Blab is here in the chat room and has that link ready to go, we'll post that as well. But going to be a fun, and just going to go over one night and come back Saturday night up in San Francisco next weekend. It's exciting.
Are you gonna go to the zoo with Tyson again?
Probably like not. Probably won't be a lot of time to, you know, I have to do some podcasts probably on the road. And then we're going to be learning a little bit more about Blab. And then we're going to be doing a show there live. So it's going to be a very fun next weekend. But as far as setting the stage up here today, we've got a nice crowd showing up and filtering in. Lots of familiar faces here in the chat. So looking forward to hearing from you guys. We had a very busy week, of course. We have a lot of exciting stuff going on Survivor, and looking forward to talking about reactions to the podcast that I did with Denise, who I thought was fantastic, and Antonio Mazzara. I feel like that was one of the strongest overall Survivor podcasts we've done in a while. Plus, we had The Amazing Race last night, which I feel like I was a little bit shortchanged in being able to talk about because of my internet connection issues on Friday night. Plus, we have all the excitement around the New York Metropolitans as well. And it also, we're also going to be starting to begin our Big Brother 17 post-finale interview series. So we're going to be trying to bring you a few of those here and there. And hopefully, I think it's looking like maybe Tuesday night, we might have the great Johnny Mac coming on to the podcast to talk with us. Again, that probably Tuesday night evening. I've been a little bit the person of keeping it in pencil right now, because based on if there is a Mets elimination playoff game that night, I'm going to want to schedule around that. So they have not announced the times yet for the Mets for Monday and Tuesday, if needed, Jordan. So we'll see. Maybe we get some closure on that coming up in the next couple of days of what would potentially be going on for a game 4 in the NLDS, because I would be way too distracted to and be it would be unfair to Johnny Mack to have me interview him during that time. But I've been in communication with Johnny Mack, and we're going to try to do a couple other ones along the way as well. Jordan, how have you been? Because you are working on, you are tracking down a huge interview coming up today. You are going to be live in just a little bit today as well with the great white whale of Big Brother interviews.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be live a little bit later today. It's going to be 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific on the Reality TV Happy Hour, talking with the great Eric Stein about some Survivor this week.
Wow, so, how about that?
I'm very excited. Eric is my favorite Big Brother contestant ever. I've loved Eric so much on this podcast. Just everything that he does, he's great. So I'm very excited to have Eric on and talk to him, because he's very elusive, Rob. He's hard to track down, but I managed to do it.
Yeah, how'd you work that out? How'd you track down Eric Stein for an interview?
Well, I've been talking to Eric a little bit over the summer. I added him on the old Book of Face in July when I got home from Big Brother Canada. And I said, hey, Eric, huge fan of yours. And I just explained that I love Eric so much. He's my favorite house guest ever. I don't know if Eric gets a lot. So maybe that he liked that. And we've just been talking back and forth about doing a show, and finally worked out. And that's what's happening today. So I'm very excited, and hopefully that'll go better than things went for the Dodgers last night, because that was not so fun for me.
Now, for this interview with Eric Stein that you're going to be doing later on today, what is the topic going to be? Are you just going through? Are you going back to Big Brother 8? Are you talking about the current state of Big Brother? Is this a sort of open forum?
No, today we're just going to be talking about Survivor, Rob. So we'll be recapping through the latest episode of Survivor Cambodia. Just some additional Survivor stuff for people who want to listen to anything more. Get Eric Stein's take on it, because we got a little taste of what Eric thought about the season at Live Know-It-Alls a couple weeks back. But Eliza Orleans was kind of dominating that conversation. So didn't hear too much from Eric. I think the Rob Has a Planet community wants to hear from him and see what he thinks about the season. So that's what we're going to be talking about. There's another podcast we're working on, but haven't completely locked that down yet. So I will, and I'm sure we'll talk about that today and let you guys in on that. So if you want to check that out, that would be awesome.
Okay. So that's going to be a very, very fun. If people are listening to this in the archives, how could they hear that interview with Eric Stein?
So if you want to listen to that in the archives, you can do so by subscribing to Reality TV Rehapups on iTunes. So that's robhasawebsite.com/rehapups. Or if you want to subscribe to my podcast only feed, the Rehappy Hour, you can do so by going to robhasawebsite.com/rehappyhour. That's happy hour with an R at the front. And all of our videos are, sorry, all of our interviews, most of them are going to be on YouTube. So if you want to subscribe to Reality TV Rehapups on YouTube as well, never miss one. That's a good way to check those out as well.
Yeah, you can also get the Reality TV Rehap Ups on the Rehap app by going to robhasawebsite.com/app. That'll get you all of Rob as a podcast, post show recaps, and then everything going on at Reality TV Rehap Ups. We have a Are You the One on our MTV Reality Rehap Up as well. Plus, Jessica Lease is also doing her own Amazing Race interviews from time to time. Jordan, so exciting week of Survivor, as we have now 3 weeks in the books. What was your take on the fallout from this past week's episode and the three tribe mitosis?
I thought it was great. I was very excited to see this. This is, again, you've mentioned before, I mentioned this on the podcast this week, that this is an idea that was talked about on the Survivor think tank, the original one, a couple years back. So it's cool to see. Yes, 2012, way back in the day. So with the great Stephen Fishback. So that's kind of cool to see that finally come to fruition. And yeah, it's exciting. I think the three tribe format is the way Survivor is, or the direction that Survivor is headed in right now. And I think that it's a lot more exciting. It creates more dynamics, especially in an all-star season when there's all these pre-existing relationships with a lot of these people. So I really enjoyed the episode. I thought that Tasha came across very strong, probably the best episode of her career, as you talked about with Josh on Know-It-Alls this week. So I was really impressed. I thought that it was a great episode for her. And I felt bad for PG, though, because I really did enjoy PG. And I think that, you know, she was somebody who was kind of playing from behind a little bit in China. And I thought, okay, maybe this is the time that she's finally going to get her chance to run things a little bit for a time. And she just never quite got her feet under her. And sadly, she had to go home. So too bad, so sad for PG. Sucks.
In terms of Tasha, one of the things that I noticed that we didn't really talk about, I thought it was interesting at the time, and then she goes on to have a very big episode, when they walk into the challenge, or they walk into the tribe swap, And then, okay, so Jeff is welcoming everybody. And then there's a moment where he says, like, Tasha's coming in. And Jeff says, oh, Tasha, always with a smile on her face. And I felt like that was sort of an odd moment to have in the episode. But there it was. And then, of course, she goes on to have like this really great episode. And the narrative is that she's the person who's really responsible for getting Abby Maria to come with her. I felt like that was ultimately a very good omen for Tasha as a player. The fact that they had that in there, and we're always looking for little clues in the edit in terms of, you know, as Stephen Fishback is famously talking about, winner's edit and things like that. I thought that was an interesting nugget from the episode.
Yeah, it was really interesting that they put that in there. Maybe that's just for the fact that Tasha had a really good episode. Maybe if we want to look into that a little bit more, then yeah, perhaps this is one of those signs that we see of a winner of a season. We had a few moments like that from Tasha. We had that one where Jeff put in that. We had the quote from Tasha where she says, I'm a fighter. I'm different. I'm going out of my way to do all this kind of stuff, and I'm going to bounce back from this. I've done this before. I can do this, no problem. So, Tasha's looking really good right now, Rob. I think that she's in a good spot. She's getting that good edit, and I think that that's something that's going to really be interesting to watch moving forward.
Okay. Also, coming out of this week, I'm also starting to, after talking through everything with Denise and with Antonio, I believe I'm starting to get extremely worried about Jeff Varner's prospects in the game. I'm worried that, and Jeff Varner has been so much fun and he's gotten so much airtime early on. I'm very concerned that this Thursday or this Wednesday is going to be maybe the final act for Jeff Varner in this season. How realistic of a possibility do you think that is?
I think it's absolutely realistic, and it saddens me to say that because I love Jeff Varner. I think he's done such a good job this season, and he's been such a good representative of the old school players of Survivor. But considering that Angkor tribe, no matter how committed that Abby is to the tribe's success and all that stuff, I think they're in huge trouble. And I think we saw that with the next time on Survivor with how that tribe's doing. I think that they're in hot water. Jeff is clearly the weakest male on that tribe. Weaker than Tasha, I would say right now. And I would argue that he's stronger than Abby because Abby's not that great in challenges, but I don't know, like that's a toss up. So he's got a lot more sense for the game, I think, than Abby does. At least that's how the other players view him. So absolutely, if they go to Tribal Council, I think that this might be it for Jeff Varner, which is really, really disappointing. And I hope that's not the case. I hope we see something different. I hope he finds an idol clue or something, because that clue is still out there at the Angkor Beach, that's my perception of it, at least. So hopefully he can get himself out of this. I mean, he got himself out of a pretty sticky situation this week, so you never know, but things aren't looking so great.
Now, according to the cursed picture, he still has one more week to go. So maybe he can sort of buy himself a week and then at least make it to week 5, according to where he's sitting in the cursed picture.
That damn cursed picture. Who would have thunk that, eh? That all those would fall in a row.
Yeah, that is pretty wild. Let's also just circle back to Abby Maria, because she's been such a lightning rod this week in terms of, and really for this entire season. And I was just thinking about this in terms of, like, I don't know at what point this changed, but if Abby Maria was somebody that was on one of the first, say, 10 seasons of Survivor, she'd be the first person voted out of the season. And she almost was this season, but she wasn't. And now it's starting to feel like momentum is building that she's going to not be voted out anytime soon, because people are always going to have somebody worse to worry about that. I've got a couple of questions about this. What was the point in Survivor history where this changed?
Man, that's a good question, Rob.
Is it Philip? Is it a point earlier than this? At what point is it like, but this is the person that's getting on everybody's nerves, that the person that's always having the problem. At what point did this person say, this person, well, we won't vote this person out?
Well, I think that Philip was a big point where, or it's in the memories of a lot of these people, these survivors, because he's the person who utilized that strategy was Boston Rob. And Boston Rob is somebody who is revered in Survivor history as one of the greatest players ever. And that strategy worked flawlessly for him. So I think that motion kind of started then. Yeah, I don't know. I think I wouldn't necessarily say that. I mean, if this was, let's say that this is Survivor 31, these people all have their minds wiped. They've never played Survivor before. It's not an all-star season. I think maybe it's a little bit different, Rob.
You think it's the all-star factor.
Yeah, I think the all-star factor is a big thing, because if Abby was pulling this kind of crap on a season with all new people, I don't think she's sticking around.
She wasn't going to be the first person voted out of Tandang, though.
That's a good point. So, but again, I mean, if Tandang was going to tribal council frequently and not winning immunity every single time, who knows? Things could have changed. The dynamic could have been different.
But she was in no danger, really, at Tandang. I mean, it was going to be, it seemed like probably Lisa Welchel probably would have been the first person out. And then it was probably going to be RC or Scoopin.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess then, I don't know. There's a recurring player that season, like I said. But in all-star season, it's amplified. I guess the point in time to answer your original question would have to be, I think, yeah, the Philip thing in Redemption Island season 22. Because I think that was kind of where we saw that mindset become more prevalent with these survivors. I think that, again, we saw in Fans versus Favorites 2 in Karamoan, where Sherry is saying that, yes, Shamar is my new Philip, all that kind of stuff. That became more of a thing. So I guess, yeah, 22 is kind of around the time. I think also, too, you could say that, and not necessarily... And what are we saying? We're saying Abby is just somebody who's just so volatile. She fits into that category, because if it's people that are just useless, I think that Russell Hance famously in Samoa was saying, I want to go to the end with all the weak girls and all that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
but right? I'm not saying in terms of like what they're bringing to the tribe, in terms of somebody that's just such an, not even an agitator, but somebody who is just having, you know, so much drama.
A cancer to the tribe.
I don't know. That's kind of a loaded word. I don't want to use that. But in terms of just somebody who is just always at the center of every single conflict week after week after week.
Yeah. No, I think that's really, yeah, I guess, because you can think about the parallels between Philip that season and Abby Maria, every single conflict in Redemption Island really, for the most part, had to do with Philip, whether it was his own tribe getting mad at him, whether it was the Zapatera people getting mad at him, whether it was him getting mad at the Zapatera people for calling him or for being racist, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of where that came from. And I think that's a thing, Rob. I think that when a great player tries out a strategy and when they do something and you see that it works, and these people that have played before or these fans watch the show and they see, wow, this has worked before, I'm going to try doing that, because if it worked for Boston Rob, why can it not work for me? So, and I think that's kind of the mindset that Jeff Varner had coming into this season early on, as we saw him saying, oh, it's so delicious. Huh? I love it. It just turns me on. Like saying that about Abby Maria. I think he might be regretting those words, but I don't think he'd be saying that if we didn't see Philip Shepherd and Boston Rob go all the way to the end in Redemption Island and have Boston Rob basically win that thing unanimously.
Okay. I want to start to get into questions from you guys here on Blab, and also getting some of you guys here up on the show with us. Just one last thing on this before we jump into some questions. Jordan, just to compare this back to Big Brother, could a person like an Abby Maria last for a while in a Big Brother, whether it's a new season or an all-star season? Have we seen this type of person do well in a Big Brother season? The person who is at the center of conflict with everybody and also not like in lockstep with any particular voting block. Have we seen that person on Big Brother?
So like you're saying a free agent that is in fights with everyone all the time. Well, I mean, sorry, are you saying, have we seen this or can we see this?
Have we seen this?
Have we seen this?
And would it work? Or is it that Big Brother that you're in such close quarters that you're all like cooped up together in one place that you couldn't stand that person in Big Brother. You'd have to vote. Forget the strategy. You just have to vote them off, but just for your sanity.
Yeah, and the first name that came to mind, and a couple people in the chat room are saying this, was Gina Marie on Big Brother 15. Although I don't think Gina Marie was as confrontational as Abby. She got into some fights with people.
Hold on here. All of yous are a bunch of scrubs. You're a bunch of cockroaches. No chicken parm.
No chicken parm for me and anyone in the chat. But yeah, no, I think that that's one that I could think of. Although Gina Marie had people. She was with
Nick Juhas. Have you seen Nick Juhas? I saw Nick Juhas on the Today Show a couple of weeks ago.
What? Nick Juhas on the Today Show?
Yeah. He's like a scientist now. He's like the new Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Wow, man. That's so awesome. Bill Nye. I'm the new Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Nick Juhas is a mover and a shaker. Everybody doubted him, but he's like a scientist on YouTube.
Well, you know, going off on a tangent here, I think that we got to give mad props to Nick Juhas, because seriously, after Big Brother 15, so many people hated him, but that dude hustled.
That did
man.
Not stop him.
It didn't stop him. It didn't stop him.
That did not discourage him.
I should have taken Nick's example and done the same thing. I should have been like, no, I don't care if everyone hates me. I'm going to go out there and be, you know, shove my stuff down everyone's throat and wait until they get me on Entertainment Tonight Canada. And then I can vote for the greatest survivor of all time. But back to that question, I think, yeah, we haven't really seen that too much in Big Brother, because Big Brother, it's a little different. I think that early on in the game, you see it so often that people are just so, the people that stand out like that, that cause so many problems, they just go home. We saw that with Audrey this season, right? We saw somebody who was at the center of pretty much every conflict, and there was no way she was going to make it to the end of the game just because it's different. Survivor's 39 days. Big Brother, it's a game that lasts, now in Big Brother US, it almost lasts 100 days. So it's very difficult. You can't escape any of these people. You're not even, I mean, in Survivor 2, you're outside at least a little bit. In Big Brother, you're trapped in there. You can't escape. So Gina Marie is somebody who came to mind for me, made it to the final two. And then I guess Sabrina Abate, Big Brother Canada, at one early on, she had an alliance. They pretty much died. She was by herself. She was at the center of a lot of these conflicts. And she kind of just coasted her way to the end because she was this goat, and everyone knew that, hey, if I'm in next to this person in the final two, I'm going to win 100%. So those are probably the two people that come to mind the most for me. But it's a lot harder on Big Brother because there's just way more days. It's a long time. You go, as someone who's lived in there, I couldn't do it. We got rid of all the crazy people early on, and the people who, well, I shouldn't say crazy people, but the people that were causing problems, and that because it was, we just couldn't deal with it. We were annoyed, so that we sent them home. Now, was that the smartest move? Probably not. But I think that's kind of just human nature, is it's tough. It's tough, Rob, living in a house with someone like that. Yeah. I couldn't live with Abby Maria for 39 days, let alone 70.
Okay. Also, I Googled the Nick Juhas Today Show clip. You could see him like inhaling like balloons of helium and like putting things like in liquid nitrogen and like smashing them on the Today Show. If you're for any Nick Juhas fans out there.
Oh man, I'm the number one Nick Juhas.
Pretty wild.
Fan. Definitely checking that out, man. That's so awesome.
The guy's a hustler. All right, let's take some people on the show. Here is Jen. He is a master of blab. Jen.
Howdy, howdy, guys.
How you doing, buddy? Jen.
Big Jordan fan. I'm glad to be on here with
Who's
him.
Who's not? Again. Who's not?
Yeah, right, Jen. Come on, be real. Be honest. No one's a big Jordan fan.
I'm a big Jordan fan. I mean, you're the Jordan that chooses to volunteer for stuff.
Yeah,
whether it be a true podcast or sit on the block.
Well, you volunteered to come on here, Jen. So what's your question?
Well, you guys were talking about like the Abby Maria thing and goats and things like that. Is that like a trend that you guys have seen? Because it seems to me like if you look back, you've got, you know, Will and Dan last season. You've got Missy / Muffin. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me like the people that always, you know, start trying to bring that goat with them get bitten. And then whoever sticks around with that goat ends up, you know, coming out pretty well in the situation. For example, with Missy, you have John Mish was like, oh, this is the perfect person to bring with me. And it bit him in the long run.
Well, so are you saying that John Mish looked at Missy as a goat to bring to the end with him?
It kind of seemed that way. I mean,
see, I don't think that was why that was his motivation.
It that way at first, yeah. But once she started arguing with people, he was like, this is an even sweeter deal than I originally thought it was. And then, you know, let me hook my lot in with her and see where it goes.
For me, from where I have gone back and looked at this, I feel like John just felt like he could beat anybody in the end, and thought mm-hmm. that he had a good enough connection with Missy, and he felt like he could trust her. It wasn't so much that he felt like he could beat her as a goat. I think Natalie probably saw Missy more as a goat. I think that John just saw her as like a neat lady who could just sit there at the end with him and nobody could beat his story in the end. I don't think he necessarily was like worried about who against who. The only person that John seemed to be worried about going to the end with was Jeremy, because that Reed and Josh had started the like, hey, who's everybody's going to vote for him? He's a fireman. And ultimately we're seeing that still having a carryover into season 31, where Jeremy won't even tell people that Val is pregnant because he doesn't want to be an even more, undesirable person to go to the final three with. So I don't think that that was necessarily the case, but it's an interesting point of the people that the harder you try to get to the end with the goat, the more likely you are to get picked off and the goat ultimately gets to the end.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Jordan, is this the same as on Big Brother? Now, I feel like this was the first Big Brother season in the last couple that we've seen where we don't have a huge goat in the end of the game. And I guess you could sort of, you could say maybe, but I think you got the less goat-like of the two twins in the final three. Is this a pattern that we're seeing across both of these shows?
Yeah, I definitely think it's certainly something that's come up in recent seasons. I think you look at Worlds Apart, right? Rodney wanted to go with Will. Will was his boy, and then gets cut right towards the end. Will goes there instead of him. We saw, I guess you look at this Big Brother 16. I mean, honestly, I think that if Cody was smart, he would have cut Derek and he would have gone with the goat that Derek had set himself up with in Victoria. He would have gone to the end with her. So there we had that there, Big Brother 15. You have that with Andy going to the end with Gina Marie. Although nobody really got cut like that in that scenario. So I don't know. I guess the one thing that comes to mind for me, again, Big Brother Canada 2, we had John and Netta in the final three with Sabrina, and Sabrina was the goat that everybody wanted to take to the end. John wanted to take her to the end. Netta wanted to take her to the end. And because they pushed her along so far, Netta got screwed out of going to the end because John said, hey, you know what? Thanks for getting me here, Netta, but I'm going to cut you. See you later. I'm going to go win myself the game. And that's what he did. So I definitely think that this is a trend and this is a thing. And it's something that these people need to be aware of. And it's something when I played that I was trying to think of too, was that don't want to be surrounded by too many goats because because then you're screwed. You're surrounded by people will be like, hey, wait, if they take a step back, they realize, you know what, hey, why would I go sit at the end with Jeff Varner when I've got Abby Maria here? We'll cut Jeff Varner. I'll take Abby Maria. I'll go with her and I'll go win the game instead of him. So it's something that's interesting. I think that, again, back to fans versus favorites, Sherry and Shamar, I think that was something she really tried pushing. And then she kind of at a certain point was like, okay, Shamar's a lost cause. Although Shamar got medevaced or whatever, if you want to call it like that. You watched him more recently.
He had sand in his eye, Jordan.
Yes, sand in his eye. But I think Sherry was kind of trending towards.
He scratched his eye.
Anymore. So I definitely think it's a thing. Absolutely.
Okay. Now, is the ultimate shark move in these games, if you are a real player who is a threat, should you start targeting the goats instead of trying to be at the end with the goats? Should somebody who's like a big threat in one of these games come in and say, okay, let's just vote out all the goats? In sort of like, in some ways, we're seeing a little bit of this with like people like Jeremy and Joe talking about, I want to surround myself with the other alpha males. I want to make sure because I don't want to be picked off for being the threat. Jeremy even said in his pregame, I don't want there to be any goats around. Is this the way that people should be looking at it? So get rid of everybody who is going to be the desirable people to take to the end. And then that also just buys you more time of giving somebody, it's almost like a Jenna Lewis type, hey, all the millionaires, all the winners have to go. Winners have to go home first. So at least just give everybody an agenda of what to be doing. What do you like that, Jordan?
I do really like that, actually. I think that that's a great idea. If you're somebody like Jeremy Collins or Joe Anglim, you need to surround yourself with huge targets because if you're sitting if you're at the merge and there's a bunch of Abby, you're surrounded by Abby Maria and Cass and these people that aren't necessarily viewed as huge threats. You're and Keith Nail and Wu, those kinds of guys, no shade at those guys, but I think that you're in trouble because you're asking for it. You're the clear biggest target. These are not people this isn't their first rodeo. They're going to come after you. So I think that absolutely that's something to keep in mind. I think the person that did this the best on a reality TV show that I can think of was Dr. Will and two people, Dr. Will and Mike Boogie in Big Brother All-Stars. season seven, they got rid, their strategy was get rid of all of the floaters early on in the game, keep the huge threats around, keep around season six and Janelle, the people that was at the, that were at the forefront, keep Daniel Reyes around, keep these big targets in the game, because then guess what? Nobody's going to come after Chilltown because, hey, look, there's four, five other people that are bigger threats than them in the game. So if you are one of these big threats, that's 100% the move that you should take. And in my opinion, if you think that you're such a huge threat that you're going to get picked off, it's a little bit risky. You've got to be able to win in a final two or a final three scenario. But if you're someone like Jeremy or Joe and you get to the end, I think that you definitely have a case to win the game for sure. And why not do that?
For those of you guys in the chat room, if you want to post your questions and have them sort of stand out from the rest of the fray here on the comments, if you start your question with the slash Q, that sort of puts the question sort of tag on that, and then I can go ahead and see through all the questions. Jen, what do you think about all this?
Now, I being as a person that has never played any of these games, I just have a theory that might work. And I want to see what your guys' take on
theories. We like it.
Instead of targeting the goats, what if you, if there's an obvious goat, you use that to target people that were trying to pair themselves with the goat. So, you know, as an Abby Maria kind of thing, you go around and say, oh, look, they're trying to pair up with Abby Maria and they're going to try to get to the end with her. We should get them. And I mean, eventually you might have to take care of the goat, but I mean, that's something that you can kind of use. Let's see who's getting close with Abby Maria and use them, especially if they're the bigger target to win, you know, maybe trying to target. And that almost seems like what some people might be thinking of doing this season. I don't know what you guys' thoughts on that is, but it seems like it would be somewhat of a good plan.
So are you saying to everybody, okay, Abby Maria is the goat. Anybody that's working with Abby Maria, we have to vote her out. Are you saying like she's our goat? We can't let anybody work with her? Because I think that you saw that a little bit last season in Worlds Apart with the people that were sort of like aligned with Will, mm-hmm. with Will and Dan. Like, it's like, I think there was a little bit of fighting between like, oh, those guys are the best. I want to be in the end with them. And then, you know, going after the other people that were sort of hanging out with him, like, oh, Tyler, he's trying to get to the end with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of seems like that would be the way to go. Because a lot of those people that never really clearly paired themselves with the goat ended up being someone towards the end, you know, last four or five. I mean, look at, I mean, obviously Mike tried to go with Dan, but it didn't really work out in his favor because Dan turned on him. But I think it actually helped that he wasn't close with Dan after a while. I think if he was still with Dan, it might have hurt him in the long run. Obviously it didn't matter because he was winning immunities, but I still think strategy-wise, you know, pointing out, hey, they're trying to be with Dan and Will because they know that they can't win. Let's get rid of them was a kind of a good strategy almost, as long as you're not too big of a threat, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, the Mike thing is sort of its own different animal because of all of the immunities that he ultimately ends up winning and having the immunity idol. So that's really, especially with going back and watching that in Evolution of Strategy Chapter 30, it was very difficult to sort of like parse apart like what was strategy and what was working and what was just that he was winning the challenges. It's tricky, and I think that's sort of a weird season, but something that I think that we're going to be talking about a lot throughout this season and probably future seasons in Big Brother is talking about the impact of the goat and, you know, how people are sort of like, they know how the story ends, and the people that are trying to, instead of just like, you know, getting rid of a person who's annoying, how much you're trying to bring that person forward. So fun stuff to talk about. Let's bring in another person here. Gregory has been waiting to jump on here. So let's try that. And also, let me bring in a question. And so let's try to answer this question from Umberto, who wants to know, can the goat identify themselves as a goat and then try to tell other people that they're the goat? I feel like it's a little bit, once you realize you're the goat, you're no longer the goat. Like, I feel like Vanessa on Big Brother this season was like, oh my God, you guys, nobody, I can't win. I can't win. Everybody should take me to the end because like, I just, everybody hates me. I can't win.
So you're saying like once you realize that you're the goat, you are no longer that. So how so? So you're saying Vanessa saying that she made her not be the goat?
I think that if you are aware enough to realize you are the goat, you cannot possibly be the goat.
Okay. Yeah, I would say that's fair. I think Vanessa is a little different in that sense because she was just trying to, it was not a goat. I think she was just
exactly
trying to
because if you're aware enough to know you are the goat, then I don't know if you can be the goat.
Goats just think that they're that good that no matter what, they're going
to
win.
Right. Like Dan Foley thought, like, I will win the game. If I get to the end, I will tell my story and I will win.
Yeah. I applied for Survivor 98 times.
Yeah. All right. Let me bring in Greg, who's here on the line. Greg, how are you?
Good. You?
Very good. Greg, thank you for jumping on. What's your question?
What's up, Greg?
All right. So we saw you talk with Denise this past week.
Yes.
So I was wondering, could we see someone repeat Denise's history where they go to every single tribal council and end up winning?
Okay. Well, that's a good question.
So we've got Jeff. We've got, Abby and Wu.
Those are the three people. If of those three people, the one person I think that would have the best chance to do that, I think, would be Wu. Yeah. Because I feel like that, I guess Abby, if what we're talking, I feel like Jeff is in trouble. I feel like Jeff needs to avoid tribal council, and I don't know if that's going to be the case because I just feel like just the way that the politics are shaping up against Jeff, I think he's in trouble because I think that it really depends on where Tasha and Andrew want to go next, and they have three options because they're not going to vote against each other. Are they going to go after Wu? I don't think so because they're going to need him to. I don't think Andrew's going to be a guy you're going to be able to talk into the intentional Matt Singh. So I think that Andrew is going to feel like Wu is the most trustworthy of these three people. Are they going to go after Abby Maria? It's possible. But again, I just think that they're going to think that Jeff is sort of a shifty guy. And I feel like that they're going to go after going to go after him. And the only other scenario is that maybe the three of them can band back together. But Abby Maria hates Wu or is upset with Wu right now. And again, just because Abby Maria is mad at you one day doesn't mean she's going to like you the next day. But I have a feeling that it's going to be, I think that Jeff is the easiest person to paint the target on because he has sort of the untrustworthiness thing. Plus, he also has the not being a big part of the winning the challenges that Andrew is not going to love. Plus, he's also probably a big person into KO in terms of how Andrew and Tasha are looking at that. So I feel like if anybody has the best chance to go to every tribal council and potentially win following up Denise's footsteps, I think it's Wu. But I think Abby has a decent shot to go to every single tribal council too because she's on Angkor.
Yeah.
She's probably going to be there. Basically, she would just have to then get onto a loser tribe after the next iteration and then come out of that, and then people start to see her as the goat. Because I think that once Abby Maria makes it to the merge, I think she's the kind of person that doesn't typically get targeted post-merge. And that's why it was such an anomaly that nobody wanted to take her to the end back in Survivor Philippines. But that was a group of people that said, I don't care if she's a goat. She's so, we can't reward this behavior. So what do you got, Jordan or Jen? Do you guys have a take on this? Could somebody repeat what Denise did in the Philippines?
I think it's unlikely. I think that's something we will never see again in Survivor history, but I think that the chances of that happening for any of these people on the season, I think, like you said, as soon as you said, as before you even said Woo, I was like doing this for like the wooch, like to signify a train, cause I love Woo. And I think that absolutely he can make that happen. He's a likable dude. Woo's a very likable guy. And I think that if he's in a final three, absolutely, he's got a shot of making a case to win the game. And I think come merge time, he's somebody who people aren't necessarily going to view as a big threat because if you saw him on his last season, you've seen him so far in this season, he has no idea what's going on. So I think that if we run into a potential...
Jordan, how did you say that? That's not cool.
No,
if he did any kind of strategy at all, like even if he did one move, that would be seen as amazing for Wu.
Mm-hmm.
So like,
hey, he stole Spencer's clue.
Yeah, I mean, if because he's done nothing up to this point, if he does one move, everybody would be like, oh, he's awesome. He's really good at strategy.
Yeah. Like, who's this new Wu? You know, people have said that I was I got some comments on Twitter that I was a little too hard on Wu this week. So I want to make it up to him. And I want to play that the great Shut Up Tim has recorded a hype song, like a WWE entrance theme song for every single player this season, and I've been sitting on these for a while, and I haven't played any of them yet. But let me play Woo's song just to get some Woo hype going about potentially being the new Denise.
Woo! Go in ninja stealth mode. Woo! Running like Sonic the Hedgehog. Woo! Didn't take Cass to the end. At least he gets a chance to play again. Oh my god, that's Woo's music! Woo, young Woo Hang! Yeah, so maybe he could be the new Denise. Maybe.
Maybe. I read a question earlier, and I wanted to ask you guys to see what your take is on it. I can't remember who it was. I really love to give him props, but it's kind of hard not knowing. I'll scroll back up later and see. But it was, why didn't they go 2-2-2 to get Jeff out? Because then they would have... they would still be able to vote, and they would only have one person, I think.
Okay.
Right?
And that was from Derek in the chat room had asked that question. I mean, to go 2-2-2, that's certainly interesting. Now, but now you're going to try to talk to Abby Maria about being on board with this 2-2-2 plan, and then you're saying to Abby Maria, like, who's the two that Abby... Is Abby voting for PG? And then who else
is voting? It would be Jeff and Abby would vote for PG. Woo and PG would vote for Abby, and Tasha and Savage would vote for Jeff. And then PG, Abby, and Jeff couldn't vote.
Yeah.
So it would be just Woo and Tasha and Savage.
So I think that there's a lot of moving parts here. One, you're going to have to talk to Abby Maria about strategy, and she's going to be like, wait, why aren't we just voting out PG? I don't like this. This wasn't this wasn't what we talked about. So you have to talk to her about this. And then you say, no. Like, oh, you're trying to. This
but
isn't
she's under the impression that PG is the one going out.
And then you want to deal with her after this tribal council. Why did you guys lie to me? Why did you guys not tell me what was going on? I don't trust you. You didn't tell me what was going on. So again, and Andrew Savage is not the kind of guy who's going to overthink.
They're going to be dead to her.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and then again, yeah. If you F with Abby Maria, yeah, you will be dead.
With me, you're dead.
You're dead. So again, you don't want to F with Abby Maria. Andrew Savage wants to keep it simple. He doesn't want to do too much chicanery. There's more things that could go wrong for Andrew and Tasha. This was a gift horse that they weren't going to look in the mouth, and they weren't going to try to overthink it. So I think that 2-2-2 was probably a little impractical for this vote with people that you don't even know what's going on. And again, you have Jeff Varner, who's such a wild card at tribal council. He could be blowing something up. So I think just keeping it simple was probably the way to go. All right. I want to try to get a little bit of a rotation going. So Jen, thank you so much. We'll talk to you again soon. Greg, you can hang out here for a minute. Let's bring in Ryan. I know he's been waiting as well.
Right.
And let's bring in another question as well. And so let's try this question about from Nemiel, who says, isn't voting out Varner the best option for Tasha and Savage since PG and Abby don't function well together? What do you think about that idea? Instead of voting out PG, voting out Varner and then keeping the two people who don't like each other together, Jordan, do you think that would have been effective?
Yeah, I mean, I think that would have been great, but at the same, and I think that based on what Jeff Varner has done so far in this game, he's shown that he's definitely a threat, and if you can get rid of him, it's great. But at the same time, I think that these guys, they had an easy, they wanted to appeal to whatever, to Abby's interests, and if Abby wants to get rid of Jeff Varner, or sorry, if she wants to get rid of PG, then you know what, if I'm Tasha and Savage, I just want to do whatever I can to stay alive. And it goes back to what you were saying earlier with the 2-2-2 thing. I think that is, I mean, it would have been in an ideal world. I think that's great. But I think that just with the whole situation and how Tasha and Savage were playing from behind, I think that it's what they did is fine. And I think moving forward now, as we've talked about earlier, they're in a position to get rid of Jeff Varner next week anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think either way, they're going to be okay.
Right. When you're trying to curry the favor of the swing vote, the decision belongs to the swing vote of like, okay, we'll vote with you, Abby Maria, whoever you want. You want Jeff Varner, you want Peachy, you want Wu. We're not gonna quibble with you. Just going back to what Tasha went through in Survivor Kageyan at the merge, where Sarah was deciding like, no, I'm the president, I want this, you know. And again, they didn't put up much of a fight there, but they were trying to figure out. Whereas then Tony's alliance came to Cass, and when Trish was like, Cass, whoever you want to vote out, you tell us. You pick. And Cass is like, Sarah. And like, fine, good. And then they put the votes on Sarah. Ryan, how are you doing this morning?
Hey, I'm doing good.
Welcome. Welcome. All right, Ryan, what's your question this morning?
All right, I've got an editing-related question. So on Survivor All-Stars, we saw Amber win, who really wasn't a major part of the edit. You know, we had Richard Hatch and Colby and Ethan and all these people we really wanted to see go out early. And those were the people who got the big focus in the first couple episodes. And then in Heroes versus Villains, we had Tom, you know, Tyson, Boston Rob, and all these other people who got major, major focus in the first couple episodes go home pretty quickly. So I really feel like, you know, Sandra and Amber were people who had a lot of really invisible episodes in, you know, our two previous all returning seasons.
I will say, I'm not so sure about Sandra having many invisible episodes. I feel like she's pretty prominent throughout that season.
In the pre-merge, yeah, though, there's quite a few episodes where she has zero confessionals.
Okay. I know, at least in the beginning, though, she's in the mix. She's definitely there from the first vote. Yeah.
Yeah, first episode, definitely. But there's like this weird gap there for like four episodes, mm-hmm, where Sandra just gets like absolutely nothing.
Okay.
And I was wondering if you think there's any of the people that we haven't seen pretty much anything of that still have that shot. And
well, let's talk it through in terms of people who are the people who are in the mix that we would put in that category. And, you know, it's a lot of the female players, unfortunately. If we look at the new buy-on tribe, yeah, there's Kelly Wigglesworth. Are we buy-on or selling? Could Kelly Wigglesworth still win based on what we've seen from the edit? We'll go. Ryan, is your question. What do you think?
No to Wigglesworth.
I feel like probably, I think I would probably agree to that. I'll give her the Johnny Mac.
No,
I don't think so. Probably not. Anybody disagree on the panel?
No, I think you're spot on there.
Monica, no. Who Cass called Purple Monica on Twitter.
No.
Yeah. Anybody disagreements?
Pains me so much.
What, you're big Monica? Big Monica?
Yeah. She was my first round pick in the Happy Hour preseason draft. I love Monica Padilla, but
what were you seeing? That she's the Parvati 2.0, 2.0?
I thought she had some Parvati shallow upside of fans versus favorites. And I think that just based on her interviews and stuff I've heard from Monica, I think that she's very smart and I think that she had that potential. But just based on what we're seeing right now, I don't think she's got it.
And Kimmy?
No.
Probably.
No. Nope. Sorry, Kimmy.
No!
Yeah. Okay.
Mine is Sierra.
What about now? Sierra was somebody who I was very, very high on. Would you say that Sierra has been invisible enough? I think that Sierra is probably on that Natalie White type borderline where she's been not shown, but not completely invisible.
I think you could compare that to Sandra and Amber.
Mm-hmm. I think that Sierra is still like, it's not looking great in terms of if you're just going by edit, but I feel like there's been enough there that you could see where she starts to come on strong.
Yeah. And I really feel like a lot of these really big characters at this point in time, like I don't feel like Varner is going to be there much longer. I don't think Abby's going to be there much longer. Mm-hmm. And even Kelly Wentworth, I really see the potential to overplay.
Yeah. So. Well, she's going to be in trouble. She's going to be in hot water if Takeo goes to the trial. And she better be ready to play that idol if she needs to.
Yeah. I mean, they need Terry for challenges much more than they need Wentworth.
That'd be a good episode if Takeo goes to tribal council and then Kelly realizes that she needs to play the idol and then pulls a blind side. That'd be good.
I think Takeo and Bayon are pretty safe with that Angkor crew that we've got going on here. We've got some Matt Singh Luzon upside here with Angkor. So I don't think things are going to be looking so hot.
Is there anybody else on Takeo that you feel like has been invisible? Has Keith Nail, has he been borderline invisible?
love Keith.
You think he still has a winner upside? No, he has not been too invisible.
I think Keith still has winner upsides, but it's like this small. But, you know, like, yeah. I still think he's in the realm of possibility. I'm not, like, 100% eliminating him yet.
Okay, Greg, do you think that Keith is still in the mix?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, boy. Jordan, break the tie. Is Keith still?
I'm going to stick to the plan with my initial preseason thoughts. And unfortunately, I love the big Steve quote, but yeah. No, Keith. I'm sorry.
And then in a world where Fabio and Bob won, I don't see where Keith can't.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. I mean, you never know, but I don't see it with Keith. I think that, I don't know. I just, for whatever reason, I don't think he can make it to the end. I can see him definitely being dragged all the way there, but I think Wu has a better chance of winning than Keith if they're sitting in the end.
Okay.
Probably.
And then I don't think there's anybody that's been invisible on the Angkor. So it's only probably about like four or five people at this point. All right. I want to start to, moving some people in and out. So Greg, thank you so much for calling in. We'll talk to you again soon. Okay. Okay. Hey, bye.
See you, Greg.
All right. All right. I'm going to open up the chair for some more people. Let's bring in, the great Taryn Armstrong, who's on hold. Taryn, how are you doing, buddy?
Good. How are you?
Yes. Happy Saturday to you. And of course, you were there at the live Know-It-Alls with us. Have you recovered in full from that experience?
Yeah, I was immediately recovered. I don't know what happened to Alex.
Yeah. it was a wild night with Dan Foley, I guess. All right. So, Taryn, did you have a question today?
Can we talk about Steven?
Sure, and, Steve Fishback.
I feel like his edit might have shifted a little, because I feel like when he was on his original tribe, Bion, he was getting kind of the dopey underdog kind of edit where, yes, he's kind of on the outs, but you're kind of rooting for him. And you feel like he's not going to get this much attention if he goes out. But then the tribe swap, and he's in a better position. And now all of a sudden he's talking about how he's safe. And he's feeling good.
Oh, you feel like really he's getting the rug getting about to be pulled out from under him at it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, wow. Oh, my. Yeah, it's definitely a more optimistic week. And I was like, oh, my God, I think Steven's going to find the idol here for a second. Because we started to get like the enough of a buildup where it was like, okay, somebody's about to find the idol. And it was like, okay, maybe this is going to make sense that all of this Steven looking for the idol and Steven idol talk is going to pay off. And he's like, I really need to find the idol because I really think we're going to build consensus about the idol. And then we're cutting to, you know, Jeremy talking about the idol and Monica's looking for the idol and Kimmy's looking for the idol. And then we went back to Steven again. I'm like, oh, Steven's going to find it. And then we went back to Jeremy and then he's the one who ultimately finds it. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see Steven being set up for some sort of a fall. It does seem like either he is super preoccupied with talking about the idol or the idol is also going to figure prominently in his story.
Probably, especially the way he's talking about how he's going to use it for the tribe. And then Jeremy very like prominently says, this is my idol. Like, oh man, this is not looking good for Fishback.
Yeah, I think that's interesting though that we've seen two people also in this season, in Kelly and Jeremy, both find the idol and both not share the clue or the information that they have the idol. Do you think that we're going to see the survivors who are probably less trusting in this all-star format? Do you think that we'll see more survivors just keeping things closer to the vest this season and not sort of flailing around like, hey, I have the idol. It's, you know, I'm the person, work with me because I have the idol, and sort of like a Hans / and also maybe Freeburg type of way, Taryn.
I do. I think, you know, they've been there before. They've probably played with people who found idols and, you know, maybe it went wrong for them because people knew that they had an idol, you know, it usually does. And I think I'm pretty sure I saw Kelly say in a secret scene that, she does not plan on ever telling anybody that she has the idol, under almost any circumstance. And, we just saw Jeremy do it, and I don't see Jeremy. I think Jeremy probably sees this as if he sticks with his, you know, bro alliance, this is like his secret weapon to make sure that he's the one that wins out from there.
Yeah.
So he's probably not going to let them know.
I think that's the right move. I think I would keep it pretty close to the vest. Like I would not, I probably would disagree with Steven in terms of the idol as the, you know, alliance consensus builder. I feel like I would hold on to it. And then I think I like the move around like final seven or so, starting to like flash it around. Like, hey, if you're going to come for me, I have the idol. Start to get to the point where people, it would be very difficult to split up the votes at that point. I feel like that's sort of a strong move of like letting people know late in the game that you have the idol and making it sort of be a person that like Tony was able to do with his idols of sort of just like scare people off. Tony talked about his idols using it like the club, where if there's like two Bentleys on the street and one of them has the club on it, you're going to go steal the other one because you don't want to deal with that hassle of having to work around it. It's just going to be easier to vote somebody else off than to come. You don't want any of this, as opposed to in the pre-merge, and then people have so much time to think about it and so many votes to get through in terms of the idol. So that's going to be very interesting to watch. Taryn, do you feel like Steven's in imminent danger?
You know, I got kind of worried in that episode that if that tribe lost that challenge, you know, I can't think of anybody else who's going to be voted out. You know, no, we haven't seen anything from the women of that tribe, really. And what we saw from Spencer was some good stuff, like, you know, some kind of redemption arc kind of thing happening. So I was kind of worried. I'm not sure they're going to lose a challenge, though. So I'm not too worried. I think he's probably going to make another swap. And he has to be reunited with Savage at some point, right? They were building that storyline between him and Savage. They have to come back together at some point and face off.
Jordan, do you think that we were looking at an inevitable Savage and Fishbach reunion?
Well, I think that they've kind of really shoved it down our throats the first few episodes. So I think it's inevitable. And I think that just based on my assumptions that Angkor is going to crumble and that Bion and Takeo are going to be fine, I think that we could certainly end up in a situation where these tribes dissolve, they go back into two, and Steven and Savage have their major conflict then, or maybe we'll see that at the merge. But I'm very excited for Savage versus Fishbach. It should be a very, very good battle.
Heavyweight fight. Ryan, who comes out on top, Savage or Fishbach?
Unpopular opinion. I think it'll be neither of them.
Yeah,
I think Fish will lose first and Savage will lose second. Kind of like in Token Chains where Brendan and Coach targeted each other and then the underdogs came out on top.
Yes.
I think that Steven is going to repeat the mistakes of Brendan.
The reverse Timbira?
Yep.
Steven has become the dragon.
Yeah, Steven is the dragon. Savage is kind of like Coach in a way. He is that arrogant, you know,
interesting
Coach guy. Yeah, and I think Savage will come out on top of this battle, but he will lose the war. He'll be targeting Steven instead of somebody like Kelly Wentworth or Sierra, who are really the actual threats here. Mm. He's targeting somebody that he thinks is a threat based on previous things, but Steven hasn't done anything now that's threatening, and you have to focus on who's threatening today.
Okay. Well, let's send Steven some good vibes, and here's Steven's theme song for Survivor 31.
Steven's the best know-it-all, and hopefully that won't affect this game, because Steven's the best know-it-all, and if he got voted out, that'd be a shame, because Steven's the best know-it-all, and he's got to last at least 5 episodes, unlike some other know-it-all.
How dare you, Tim?
I think he will.
How dare you? How dare you? Well, let's see if he can get to 14th place. That's really what it comes down to in terms of the comparison. So still got some work to do. For Steven. All right, Ryan, thank you so much for joining us today.
All right, nice talking to you.
Okay.
Hey, Ryan.
I'm going to get a couple more questions in here this morning. Let's bring in Scott. And let me just quickly thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at Casper. And boy, if you want a great night's sleep like I had last night, you don't have to wait for your team to win game one of the NLDS. You could be getting yourself a great Casper mattress because they are obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. You can cut out the middleman in your mattress shopping and go and see our friends over at Casper.com because they will send you a mattress directly to your door. It comes in a big box. It's a lot of fun to open up, and you will enjoy your night's sleep on a Casper mattress. They've got a $500 twin size mattress, $950 for the king size mattress. Compare that to the industry average. It's an outstanding price. The mattresses are made in America and there's a risk free trial and return policy. You could sleep on it for 100 days. That's almost as long as Big Brother 17 with free delivery and a painless return. They've got latex foam and memory foam all together in one. It's the perfect mattress. So go ahead and try it out. Go to Casper.com/Rob. You'll get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Rob. Terms and conditions apply. So go ahead and check that out for a outstanding night's sleep, unlike what they're having on the Anchor Tribe. Scott, how are you doing? Scott, are you there?
Oh,
going once. Going, he's here, but he appears to be frozen. Maybe he's frozen. We'll try to get Scott back.
Maybe Scott doesn't like Casper mattresses. That's
impossible. Impossible.
Yeah, Dan Sinensky actually on the after show of the Big Brother season rankings podcast said he had one. He said it was great.
So he loved it. He was getting a bigger one last time I talked to him.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
wow.
John, how you doing? John in Tampa.
What's up, guys?
How you doing?
Hey, John.
Hey, JP. How's hockey week already?
No hockey talk. Come on.
Hey, what's the score in the Lightning game right now? Do you know?
Tied at 0, second period already.
Okay there we go.
All right, John, how you doing, buddy?
Great. I mean, you know, great week.
Yeah, what do you have, an Anchor buff on?
Yeah, I'm screwed.
Now, when did you get an Anchor buff?
I just got last week before the merch, and I knew that that's what's going to happen. But
I saw like before the season started that they had them online. I think it was like a big kerfuffle that they were like, "Oh wait, hold on, wait, we're selling buffs for a tribe that we haven't talked about yet." And then it looked like then they took them off the CVS store, right? But at what point were you able to get the Anchor buff?
It was on the Planet Buff website.
It was on the which website?
The Planet Buff.
Planet Buff was selling them.
Ah, okay. There we go.
And so you said, I'm going to go ahead and buy this for a tribe that doesn't exist. And then it came out. Did the tribe live up to your expectations of the yellow buff?
We'll see.
We'll see. Okay. Are you happy with the purchase? You're wearing the yellow buff.
Yeah, it's a nice purchase, you know.
Okay. All right. John, did you have a question?
Yeah, I just got two things, you know, I wanted to figure out. Like, you know, do you guys even watch Amazing Race, though, this Friday night?
Sure.
Yep.
All right, yeah. Do you think, like, the Green Team and Abby Marie have, like, a similar hate?
Interesting. So that's a fun thing to talk about. So Justin and Diana, they're the Green Team. And of course, they're the team that is getting on everybody's nerves on the Amazing Race. But it's a little bit different, I think, than Abby Maria, who's somebody who is getting into a lot of conflict. And while both of them are sort of lightning rods for the conflict that's going on, I think it's Justin and Diana who are sort of like driving that action in terms of that they are a dominant team and sort of like trying to get to the top by any means necessary. While Abby Maria, I think, is sort of just a harder person to get along with. And it's not so much that Abby Maria is trying to call the shots. I think that Abby Maria is just very easy to rile up. And I think that just having interactions with Abby Maria is causing people to have problems with her. And I thought that Denise brought up something very interesting about how it seems like it's often that she has a lot of trouble relating with the other women. It seems like that's where a lot of those conflicts come from, whether it's RC, whether it's Lisa Welchel, whether it's, Shireen and PG. It seems like that's a common denominator with a lot of the conflict. Now, again, we've seen her also call Mike Scoopin a moron and an idiot and get into it with Penner, and also throw a coconut at Mike Scoopin's head. And then who knows, she didn't seem to love Vetus either. So it might not just be a male-female thing. But I think it's a little bit different than Justin and Diana. Jordan or Taryn, do you guys see it differently?
I actually have a little bit of a question about Justin and Diana, because, you know, it's definitely coming across like they're getting on everyone's nerves, but I've only really seen the Texans complain about them. Have any other teams really complained that much?
Well, that's also a really good point about Justin and Diana, because they've been so close to the top. It's really been the only teams that have really had a lot of interaction with them have been Team Texan. So I wonder if they were further at the back of the pack, like they ended up being in the first episode, but they were sort of like they just made a they tried to go for the fast forward, and then ultimately that was closed. And then they ended up having to be in the middle of the pack, but then resume their rightful position at, back at the top of the pecking order. It'd be interesting to see who else that they would get into. I sense that there would be conflict with those other teams as well. We saw that at least the reporters were willing to engage in that sort of deal with Team Texas about like, hey, whoever U-turns them, we'll give them the express pass. And we didn't see the reporters be like, well, absolutely not. We would not participate in something like this. So, you know, it's an express pass, but they were not also like not willing to screw over Justin and Diana to get it.
It kind of felt like they were just nodding along. Yeah. But I would like to see, I would like to see somebody in a confessional talk other than the Texans talk about Justin being annoying, because it really feels like it's the Texans just have a really big problem with Justin.
They don't love Justin. They seem like they're fine on Diana, but they do not seem to love Justin. We'll see. It's a good question. All right, it looks like we're having some trouble with John's call, so I'm going to let him go. Thanks for the call, John. There is a question in the chat also from Jen who wanted to know, would Abby be fun to watch on The Amazing Race? The question is absolutely. Hundo.
Oh my God.
I am already imagining her in a taxi. Like, okay.
But who's
her
partner?
With me.
Yeah.
You are dead.
Pete, bro.
Pete, okay.
With me, you're dead.
Yes.
Okay. Now, I think Abby and PG would be a good one, especially after some of PG's comments.
I don't think PG
after.
Would agree to it.
No, I think it'd probably have to be Pete. And I saw Pete has a vlog about the season, so maybe he's getting his name out there for a potential Abby and Pete Amazing Race run. And again, if in an era where Whitney and Keith went on The Amazing Race, I mean, why not Abby and Pete, bro? All right, yeah. Scott is back with us. Scott, how you doing?
Hey, guys. Hey, pretty good. How about you?
Very good. Scott, what's going on today?
So I was wondering if you guys ever saw any type of correlation between social media use of the survivors and like their longevity in the game.
Yeah.
We see a lot of people like Kelly Wentworth and Jeff doing all these Periscopes and stuff now. So I'm wondering, is that like, this is the only time I'll have, and so I better get it out now?
Yeah,
or is it like
it's a good
I'm
point.
So confident?
You know, I used to be a big believer in that. I think that around the time of Survivor One World, this was around the time that we started to see this. And I always remember that Matt Quinlan, the Rooster, he was all over Twitter.
Yes,
he was everywhere. Yep. And then it was like, boy, this guy is going to be a big deal. And then he was out in three episodes. And so it was the kind of thing where we started to have a theory. And I feel like that Cochran might have been one of the people at the forefront of this, of like, boy, you know, there's a thinking of the people that are out early are like, hey, I got to make the most of my time in the sun. I'm only on this show for 3 weeks. I'm only on this show for 2 weeks. I'm the first boot. Let me make the most of it. So you sort of could go on Twitter and see if somebody was changing their Twitter avatar to their Survivor picture and you didn't even know who they were yet, said probably this person is going to be gone soon. Then came Survivor Kagyan. And in Survivor Kagyan, you had the person who was probably the most active on Twitter the entire season was none other than Team TV. You had Cass, who was all over the place. You had Spencer, who was all over the place. And I can
and they
remember,
all went real far.
Yeah, and I can remember thinking in the preseason, who I picked Cass to go out first in that season. I probably, I didn't say she was going to go out first in this season, but I felt like she was not going to be long for this world. And you saw Cass and Tony fighting, and Tony did not seem like a person who was going to go far based on like he's going to be way too aggressive. They'll vote him off right away. And we saw Cass and Tony fighting on Twitter. I said, oh, these people must have got into it on the pre-jury trip, because there's no way that they would both be in the game at that point. Maybe one of them, but there's no way both of them would be, and they're on different tribes. So you figure they probably got into it on the pre-jury trip, and Spencer also, and you felt like that Spencer was probably going to be a pre-jury boot based on what he was saying, and then all of these people end up in the final four. So there is no correlation at this point in time between how survivors act on Twitter versus how they act. I mean, basically, you can sort of just, you know, follow the the through line of the people who were the most active on Twitter during the campaign have continued to be the people that are probably the most active after the season is over. There's probably a little bit of a difference here and there, but I think that the people that are already engaging the audience on social media continue to engage the audience on social media after the fact. So I don't think you can read too much into it.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot for answering.
That being said, there's not a time that I see somebody post somebody else's on Facebook, or even I mean, in my head, I see like a survivor write like happy birthday to another survivor that's on the season on Facebook. And I'm like, oh, spoilers. No. This person must like this person, or this person didn't screw them over and stuff like that. So
sort of like Vince and Max last year, how we knew they were like all rooming together before it started. And it was like, well, what does that mean? They went far together, or does that mean they both were on the pre-jury trip?
Yeah. I mean, the Dirty 30 thing definitely was like, I don't know if I took anything away from it, but it definitely was like, boy, I don't like knowing that. I kind of didn't hate the season where they like, I don't mind that the survivors are on Twitter. I think that that's fun, but I feel like they really, I thought I had heard a rule this year where it was like the survivors were not allowed to talk to each other on Twitter. Oh. Like they weren't allowed to, like they were allowed to be on Twitter, but they weren't allowed to write to the other people on Twitter.
Well, because during San Juan del Sur, didn't Jeff say that they weren't allowed to be on Twitter?
Yeah, but then they dropped that for season 30.
Okay, see, I wasn't here, so I didn't know. But okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
A lot of the survivors are doing Periscopes, and I have seen some like in others' Periscopes. I don't know if that's like the same thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Like the Periscope is like, I feel like that's a little like, it's the Wild West out there. Linda Seaton in the chat room says Dirty 30 needs to DIAF. And I don't know what that means. I think I know what the AF is, but I don't know what the DI is.
Yeah, I got nothing.
I don't know what a DIAF is.
Like you're totally right that people can be active on social media for any reason, but when I see Kelly Wentworth selling Team Kelly Wentworth t-shirts, it's like she probably had a better experience or something than the first time, right?
Yeah.
I don't think she's selling t-shirts the first time.
I'm being told that DIAF is die in a fire. No
It already has, hasn't it? I mean, come on.
Please, no dying in a fire for the Dirty 30, please.
Well, didn't Eliza Orleans burn Dan Foley at the end of Live Know It Alls? Yes.
That was very.
That was a ritual. Yes.
That was very tense. That was very tense. Taryn, did you have a good time with Dan Foley at the Know It Alls?
Yeah, he was great. I didn't get a chance to talk to him personally, but he seemed very active with the fans.
He was worked up.
Passionate. Yes.
He was worked up. Really,
Every time I looked over to Dan, he's got his hands up. He's passionate about whatever he's talking about.
Yeah, I would just see him across the room with he always had like a crowd of people in front of him.
Yeah,
and you saw him just like almost like what was the the Chris Farley like the motivational speaker? You just saw him
that you'll have plenty of time to talk about what's going on Survivor when you live in a van down by the river.
Very so animated.
Yep.
man, Dan Foley, he it's such a shame he was not on Second Chances. Such a shame.
Yeah. Well, the guy is going to be a drama no matter what. So that's why he's casting gold. All right, Scott, thanks so much for the question.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Great question, Scott.
Good stuff. All right, I want to get one or two more people in here before we start to wrap things up. Taryn, are you excited to potentially hear Johnny Mack on the podcast this week?
So excited.
What's the biggest question you want to know from Johnny Mack?
Oh, man. Will he come to Boston and hang out with me?
Yes.
Pretty much. I mean, he's...
What's been the biggest surprise? I know that there's been so many different... a lot of them have already done all these pre-game or post-game questions and interviews. And Jordan, feel free to jump in on this. What do you think has been the biggest headline to come out of all of this?
Oh, man. I don't know. I don't think really... And I'll be honest, I've been slacking on listening to some of these post-game interviews. I don't think there's been anything that has really blown my mind. Can I get a lifeline, Taryn?
Nothing too crazy. Some people think Steve is over estimating the game that he played in his interviews. I'm not sure I believe that. What he's saying is kind of matching how I saw him at the time. And I know other people didn't at the time. So I understand why other people don't think so, but that's something. Johnny Mack has talked about how he was talking game all throughout the season in the diary room, but they never really showed it because you know, he had goofy stuff to show. So, you know, I mean,
that was, that's something I actually talked to Johnny Mack a little bit last week. And that was something that he said that really surprised him was that his edit was so like was in that mold. It wasn't as being a strategist. And he said that they didn't really show any of his strategy at all. So that actually kind of surprised me too, because to us at home, we just viewed Johnny Mack as like, oh, he's this comic relief character. But really, I think he was really playing the game, and he had, I mean, and as we've heard, he's a huge super fan. He knew what he was doing in there. And I don't know, I guess for whatever reason, they didn't show that. So it'll be interesting to see if, I'm excited to watch your interview with him, Rob, on Tuesday.
Okay. Patrick joins us here. Patrick, how are you doing? We have Steve issue here. Patrick, call back. We have Patrick frozen here for a second. Okay. And then we're gonna try to, you know, it's tough with the Survivor schedule to service all of these interviews. Like, we gotta like figure out a time that works for me and also figure out times that works for these people. But we'll try to do like, you know, one a week or something like that, like moving forward, and try to like go through rapid fire, and you know, we'll get to them, and then I'm sure we'll talk to more of these people. Like, I don't know if we need to talk to the entire cast. I know a lot of people are talking to like every single person from the entire season. I don't know if we need that, what the outcry for that is, and if you want to hear from every single person, that stuff is definitely out there and you could listen to it. But I feel like we'll just, you know, probably a little bit cherry pick the couple people that we want to get really do a deep dive with.
Yeah, if you want to hear, and if you're listening to this and you want to hear an interview with somebody who Rob hasn't talked to that isn't like cream of the crop, like A-list person that would be interviewed, and not, no offense to anybody, but somebody who isn't being asked, hit me up on Twitter. Let me know. I'll do my best to interview them.
Yes. Because
that's my show, honestly. That's what I do. So I'll take whoever Rob doesn't want to talk
today.
To.
Not today.
Not today, but down the road, I would gladly talk to some of these other people that we might not be seeing in RHAP.
Karen, what's the biggest thing you want Jordan to find out from Eric Stein today?
Let's see. What's Eric's biggest prediction for the season? Because I feel like he was pretty spot on with Steve for Big Brother.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And I don't think that Eric, I think in 15, Eric was really on the ball with Andy as well, winning that game. So I don't know. I think Eric Stein has a good track record with
He's a smart guy. He's I don't want to say idiot savant because I don't think he's an idiot, but he's like, but he's just sort of like this recluse that doesn't want to like really talk often. But then when he does, he has like pearls of wisdom.
Yeah.
Brilliant man.
The wise hermit.
Yeah, he's a wise man.
Wise hermit.
Okay. We probably have time for one more person if somebody wants to jump in. If Patrick wants to jump back, we have a lot of questions to scroll through. Let's see. This is a question. I'm trying to think what haven't we covered? Let's see. Eric Colston wants to know, will Kimmy continue the trend of women from the Australian Outback always making the final four in full returnee seasons? Okay. So we had, of course, Amber went to the final four in the Survivor All-Stars. Then we had Jerry go to the final four in Heroes vs. Villains. And then we also had Tina end up, what was she, final four or final five?
I believe Sierra was fifth and she was fourth.
Yeah. Sierra went out before her.
Okay. So the women from Survivor the Australian Outback, maybe, could we see top four upside for Kimmy?
Oh, this don't suck at all.
Yeah.
But Jerry didn't make it to final four in All-Stars.
But Amber satisfied the requirement.
Okay.
Yeah, so,
and Alicia didn't make it to the final four All Stars either.
Tina too.
Yeah.
So, but I would say, so I think, yeah, why not? Right. I think that she's got a shot of making to final four. I don't think she has any shot of winning the game, but easily I think Kimmy could fall into a spot where she just kind of coasts and ends up in final four, final three. What do you think, Taryn?
I feel like we'd probably be getting a little more from her, you know, if she went that deep. But I don't see a place where she'd go anytime soon necessarily. So
I don't, but I don't know. Right. And look at some of these edits of these people, right?
The thing is, though, if they don't have a story, like what is it? If she just like it's also possible, like she could make it to the top four and also did nothing interesting. We have so many people to service also. So it's also entirely possible that like, they can't put something there when there's nothing there. So when there's a wealth of things to show, they're probably going to show the most interesting things. And whatever Kimmy's story is of like, hey, maybe she's BFF with Monica Padilla and maybe she's missing her kids. But if that's not like outweighing what Abby Maria is doing, like the insanity over there, then I don't know if they're going to, what we could see potentially.
Yeah, I can definitely see her going out, you know, 6-4, somewhere around there.
I could see it too. Linda in the chat room wants to know, is Randy Bailey over his Survivor PTSD? Is that why he wants to talk? Boy, Randy is really fired up to do the podcast this week. He's been, messaging me for a while. Randy actually reached out to me in the off season, and he wanted to co-host Know It Alls this season. That's a bit of a bomb to drop. Yeah.
Randy Bailey?
Bailey reached out. He wanted to co-host the Know-It-Alls with me. I had already committed to Josh at that point in time, but it would have been definitely an interesting option to have considered.
If I would have known that, I would have done my own Survivor spinoff after the episode show with Randy. I would have asked him, because Randy actually randomly added me on Facebook about a month ago. And I was like, oh my God, Randy Bailey is adding me on Facebook. This is like one of the greatest days of my life.
He's into Survivor right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. Yeah. So a world where Randy Bailey is back into Survivor is a much better world.
Yeah. I don't know if I have to give all the credit to Haley, who's in the chat room, and Amy for really sort of encouraging Randy to be a podcaster now. But I think that Randy is, he's lit up right now. He's excited.
Love me some Randy.
That makes me so excited.
Yeah. So that'll be very fun. All right. You want to hear a couple other entrance songs before we start to wrap this up? Jordan, give me your request. Who do you want to hear?
Okay. Let's go with Keith Nail.
Okay. Keith Nail. I saw another request for that. All right. Here is Keith Nail's entrance music. All right. Here comes Big Keith Nail.
Keith Nail, Keith Nail, let's stick to the plan and we'll be all right. Keith Nail, Keith Nail, if you keep burping, you'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah, don't awesome. Don't forget that.
As long as you keep burping, I guess you're okay.
You're okay. All right, Taryn, and what's your request?
Well, let's get Vetus, because I feel like we're probably never gonna have an opportunity to hear that one in the future.
All right, take care, sweet Vetus.
Vetus, you should totally come to YOGA. You should totally come to YOGAA. You can do anything like the splits or put your legs behind your head.
No!
You should totally come to YOGA. You should totally come to YOGAA.
Vetus, you should totally come to yoga.
Yeah, okay.
So funny. And I just saw in the chat that Shut Up Tim said he's working on Randy Bailey's intro music for next week. So I'm very excited.
Tim told me the other day on email that he was going to be making one of these songs for us every week until his wife had a baby. I'm not sure when his baby is due. Tim, when is your wife due? When can we expect it's in the race to the delivery room between you and I? 5 weeks. Oh, really? Like right on schedule.
Tim, come on camera. Come on camera. Talk to us, Tim.
Yeah, Tim, give us the update. Okay, here comes the great at Shut Up Tim. If you haven't seen him in person yet. Sometimes the first. Here he is. Tim, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, how's it going? Hey.
Of course, you could hear Tim. He's one of the co-hosts on the Tribe podcast. That's why we doubly appreciate the effort he puts into helping out this podcast. So, Tim, how's everything going? Are you guys ready for the? Is this baby number one for you?
Baby number two, actually, two. Today.
We're on the same page.
Today is the first baby's fifth birthday.
Oh, wow.
She's not really a baby. And yeah, I'm just jumping on really quick before I have to go pump up the bounce house. So,
wow.
Actually, so
I want a bounce
so
house.
So I'm hoping that to get you maybe five more songs.
Wow.
And then sporadically when before the baby comes. But last night she started contractions and we were at the hospital. All night long. It was preterm labor. So they said anytime. It could be tonight. It could be, so who knows, Rob. And So value the songs.
Wow.
So
cherish the songs.
So yeah, Tim, you could have two kids with the same birthday?
Possibly, yes.
And yeah, save money on those parties in the future.
Yeah, it'll be good. Boy and girl. So, you know,
have
to do double duties. Yeah.
Tim, I was watching that Met game last night, and then Nicole was on the couch and she just started screaming. I was like, honey, like, please, like, I gotta get through this game right now.
Yeah. It was, you know, Rob, I thought like it would be easier the second time, and, having done it, gone to the hospital at least a second time, I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't remember being this tired the first time. And yeah, so I'm not ready.
It's very taxing on us. I think that's very underreported story, how hard it is for the father to have these babies.
They don't advertise, but it's, I had to sleep on a couch. It was
uncomfortable.
It was really tough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I really did not get a lot of sleep either. When the first baby was born. So it's really, it's a huge ordeal.
Yeah. It's just crazy. And best of luck to you. When you guys do?
The 17th of November. So we're really right on the same schedule.
Yeah. We're due like a week before you. So, we'll see. So best of luck. You guys haven't announced the sex yet, have you?
No. No, not yet.
Is it a surprise or
nah.
A surprise for you guys at least?
It is not a surprise for us, but I feel like I like to let it be a surprise for the world. I feel like that's try to keep some things have a little bit of excitement about like what's happening.
And will this child be named after Fast and Furious cast member? Also,
Letty, is that going to be the name of your kid?
I don't. I've never seen any of those movies. I have to go and take a look at the IMDb.
You haven't?
No, I've never watched one of them.
Oh, Rob, you are missing out.
Check out Tokyo Drift. It's the best one.
All right, Tim. Is there one song that you've done that you're especially proud of that you would want people to hear that I've robbed the world of?
I don't know. It's a personal favorite of mine, but Sierra, if you haven't played that one yet. Okay.
Here we go. And then we'll let you go put that bounce house up. Yeah. Here's Sierra.
I saw Sierra voting off her mom on blood versus water number one.
Jump in, Tim.
Oh, I.
She's one crazy chick.
Chick.
Not afraid to.
Afraid
have
of
to
a rock.
Pick a rock to try to get out Tyson.
Son!
It's a long one.
I saw Sierra floating out. Her mom.
It's like a refrain.
On blood versus water,
number one.
It'll be fun to see
how
she does on 31. Cause she won't have her mom to vote out.
All right, great job.
Thank you. Yeah.
Fantastic work.
Forgot how long that was, and clearly forgot the lyrics also. So
yeah, the rest of them are like all like 30 seconds, 25 seconds. That one's a minute six for Sierra. That's probably always your favorite.
I love hearing myself. Actually, that's not true at all. That's like the hardest part of the podcast to listen to is my dumb parts. So,
all right, follow at Shut Up Tim on Twitter. How's the response been on Twitter to all your songs? The people generally are very, very supportive.
People tend to like them. They're asking for an album, which is a horrible idea. But other than that, I did catch the little bit of shade Antonio sent my way. He wasn't a big fan of this week's, so I'm stepping up my game for next week. Randy Bailey intro song will be good.
Wait, Antonio said on the podcast or on Twitter said that he didn't like
his on the podcast. His reaction was tepid at best. I felt he was being very kind to me. So I'm gonna step up my game.
All right. I didn't know that you need. I'll try to get to see if I can give the guests to be more effusive with their praise of the songs.
No. I don't want praise. Actually, I enjoy honest response, Rob. So if it sucks, I need to know it sucks. I'm good with. I know what they are. That's what I'm saying. I know my level of ability and what they are. So please keep them honest. I mean, he did say it was 1.5 earbuds, which was I think that's on the better side. It's better
than 2 earbuds is great. Yeah. But, I mean, much better than I would get.
I'm gonna give this show 0 earbuds.
Yeah.
All right. I read the subtext from Antonio. I think he's jealous because he doesn't have an intro song yet.
So. You got to get on that.
Maybe. All right. Tim, have fun at the birthday party today. Good luck with the bounce house and all the best to your wife. Okay.
Thank you. I'll enjoy my kid's damn birthday. Yeah. So,
okay. Bye, Tim. All right.
Bye, Tim.
All right. Very fun show today. We have a hashtag for the podcast today.
Oh, so one of the songs. What was something from one of those songs?
Was it we played the Keith Nail. We played who else?
Vetus Sierra.
Vetus
Woo
Sierra.
Yeah, Woo. Y-O-G-A. That
Go in ninja stealth mode. Running like Sonic the Hedgehog. Didn't take Cass to the end. At least he gets a chance to play again.
Who sings that song? Is that Nirvana?
I don't know the name of the band. I think it's Blur. Blur, it's called Song 2, I believe is
Song
the name of it.
Song 2?
Wow. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. It's a, I did that actually for a project in 9th grade. I used that song. Blur, Song 2. Yeah, it was by Blur, released in 1997, and the title is Song 2. Okay. So,
all right, how about hashtag Song Woo?
Ah, there
or,
we go.
Or Woo Fighters.
Oh, that's I think I like Song Woo. Woo Fighters is
okay.
Good.
Blur Song Woo. All right, this was very fun. Of course, next week I'm going to be up in San Francisco, and so we're going to be doing the show with a placeholder name, the Tyson Hour. We're going to be back on Monday to talk about that. Me and Tyson are going to be talking about the week in news, and so that's going to be very fun. We're going to be doing that live here on Blab on Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern time, 10 a.m. Pacific. So if you want to join us live on blab.im, we will be there, and that's going to be a lot of fun. And then we're going to be taking that show on the road to San Francisco this Saturday coming up. So we're going to be very excited for that. Plus, the Walking Dead recap is going to be back this Sunday night on post-show recaps. And so hope you can check that out as well. I'll be live with AJ Mass following the season 6 premiere of The Walking Dead coming up. So I'm excited for that to kick back off. And then, of course, we'll be doing all of our Survivor coverage. I'll be talking with David Bloomberg about why PG lost as well earlier this week. And then we'll get set up for Survivor to kick back off. And of course, Randy coming up with featuring an intro song from Shut Up Tim. So that's going to be very fun stuff coming up this week. And then, I will keep you guys posted when we lock in the time for Johnny Mac early this week. And also, we've been in communication with Steve I've been trading some text messages with Austin also. And he's my neighbor. He actually lives within a couple of miles of me. So I said to him, like, hey, why don't you just come in because you're nearby?
Just show up.
Don't just show up. that's kind of a rule. Please don't just show up. But let's figure out to do something since you're in the neighborhood. We could do it in the studio. All right. Great stuff. Jordan Parhar, how can people check out your interview with Eric Stein coming up?
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Jordan Parhar. I'll be tweeting out the link shortly. If you just go to Reality TV Rehab Ups on YouTube, or just go on robazawebsite.com, the link will be there for the interview with Eric. It's going to be live in a little under an hour. It's going to be at 12:30 Pacific, 3:30 Eastern. And we're going to be talking about the Survivor episode, so it should be a lot of fun. Send me your questions. Tweet me using the hashtag RHAP, and maybe your question will be get read on the show.
So Eric Stein, wow.
Yes.
Who'd have thunk it? All right. Send Eric my best as well. And Taryn Armstrong is at Armstrong Taryn on Twitter as well. Taryn, any final thoughts?
I've liked this week of reality TV. I think it was a good week.
Very fun stuff. All right. So we'll probably try to do this again maybe in 2 weeks coming up on a Saturday, assuming everything is, calm, that my wife doesn't go into labor before then or anything like that. So thanks, everybody who checked this show out live or in the archives. It definitely is a new show, so we do appreciate the feedback. Leave us your comments on robhasawebsite.com. Have a good one, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye.